The Right to Question is supported in part by Humanities Montana and by listeners like you.
Where is Pinedu?
Pinedu is a small town of about 26,000 in the northeastern part of Brazil. So I always think if you imagine the bulge of Brazil bulging into the South Atlantic, and you come in from the tip and follow the São Francisco River, about 30 kilometers inland, you'd come to Pinedu.
Hello, and welcome to The Right Question, a program that features authors from the Western U.S. I'm Cherie Newman talking with Amy Ragsdale about her memoir, Crossing the River, A Life in Brazil.
Why did you and your husband, Peter, decide to take your children, Molly and Skylar, to Brazil for a year? I mean, why Brazil? Why Pinedu?
So this is goes way back to my childhood, I think. I was raised living abroad about every 4 years. So I ended up living abroad three different times. First, really, when I started out at 5 months in Bangkok, Thailand, and then when I was in second grade, I was in the Philippines, and then when I was in seventh and eighth grade, I was in Cairo, in Egypt. My father just had a lot of wanderlust, and that had been true his whole life. He was always trying to catch freighters to somewhere, China, Brazil, dropping out of college. You know, it took him 3 decades to get through college. And then my mother, luckily, loved to travel as well. So I think in retrospect, that time living abroad as a child had a huge influence on my desire to travel and my desire to have our kids live abroad and live somewhere as opposed to visit. When we had two kids, we started out right away trying to figure out how we were going to travel with them and live abroad with them. And so the very first thing we did was to move abroad to southern Spain, to Andalusia, in the town of Cádiz, when our son Skylar, who was our second child, was 5 weeks old. And I had a sabbatical from the university, and we stayed for 5 months. And then we decided that we wanted to go somewhere for longer. So when he was in first grade and our daughter Molly was in fifth grade, we decided to live in Mozambique in southeastern Africa for a year, which is Portuguese speaking. It had been a Portuguese colony. And we knew that we were going to want to try to live abroad one more time before our daughter graduated from high school. And really, we decided on two things. One was we might as well pursue Portuguese since we'd started that. And the other was that we had never really explored South America much. And we thought, wow, that's our neighboring continent. We should get to know it somehow. And I guess for me, this is the way I get to know places, is to go. And also, you know, Brazil is a bigger and bigger player in the international scene. And we thought, okay, we should get to know this place. So we chose Brazil. And our kids, after the experience of living in Mozambique, where they'd gone to an international school, and we'd been part of a big expat community in a capital city, they really decided, because of that experience, that they wanted to be immersed in a small town. And they wanted to learn to really speak Portuguese, which they hadn't really learned the first time. Mostly because they met all these other kids at this international school in Maputo in Mozambique from Europe and West Africa. And by first grade, they were speaking 3 and 4 languages. And our kids were like, what's wrong with us?
So you weren't going to marry someone who didn't want to travel.
That's right.
So your honeymoon with Peter was quite unique.
Yeah, we spent 5 months traveling from far western China, Qinghai province. It's the second to the last province to the west in China, all the way to the east to Shanghai, following the Yangtze River. A lot of walking and buses and ferries.
Brazil, you note in the book, has the 9th highest homicide rate in the world. Did you know that when you took your kids there?
No, I would say we didn't research that part very well. I mean, there are a lot of things. You know, when we moved to Mozambique, we did that right after it was coming out of a civil war. And we were aware of that. we knew that we really loved Africa. We'd been to West Africa and North Africa quite a bit, but not into this Southern Africa. And we just, sort of researched it on the internet, and Peter had been there for an Outside Magazine article, so we had some firsthand understanding of the place. But when we got there, there were all kinds of things that we hadn't realized. We hadn't realized how expensive it would be, for example. We actually had thought it would be the opposite, but because it came out of a civil war, it really had an upper class and a lower class, and there was no middle class, and there was no infrastructure. So if you wanted to buy an orange, it was imported from South Africa. If you wanted to buy wrapping paper, it was imported from South Africa. So this time we said, okay, we're going to make a scouting trip. We're going to go and check it out ahead of time. So Peter and I did that in Brazil about 6 months earlier. But the homicide rate? No, we hadn't checked that out.
But there were things about that small city that attracted you. What were they?
Part of it was simply aesthetic. It was really beautiful. It's a beautiful old sort of originally Dutch and then Portuguese town. It's on a big wide river. It's the third, I think, largest river in Brazil, the Rio São Francisco, and close to the ocean. It was the Afro-Brazilian part of Brazil. So we had honed in on wanting to go to the Northeast for really cultural reasons, for the music and the dance. On our scouting trip, we landed in Salvador, in Bahia, and then we rented a car and we drove for 10 days up to Recife, which is really out on the tip, both big cities. And we ended up in Penedo because it was a size that we liked. It seemed to have a good school where they were willing to take our kids who didn't speak any Portuguese.
Peter and Skylar had the most difficulty really getting themselves immersed in the culture. You and Molly didn't have so much trouble. So what do you think the difference was?
I've been pondering that for a long time, whether there's a little bit of a gender divide in terms of travel, and maybe specifically for American men and women. I don't really know. I certainly don't have any absolute answer, but I think there were two things about that. I wonder whether in some ways women are required to be adaptable, maybe in a way that men aren't always. I just wonder that. But also I think the culture of Brazil itself is maybe harder for men than for women. So it's a very, it can be a very macho kind of in-your-face culture for men. So while soccer was an amazing way for both Peter and our son Skylar to get into the community, thank God they're both pretty good soccer players, it's also a really competitive environment. So Skylar, for example, who was 12 when we got there, immediately started playing futsal. It's called futsal in the street. Futsal is a form of soccer that's played on a small, hard surfaced court, or in Skylar's case, it was just played on the cobblestone streets or in a plaza anywhere, you could find. It's played with fewer players, and it's very fast, as you can imagine, because the ball is simply moving a lot faster than it would on grass. And he didn't really speak any Portuguese when we got there, despite our efforts to take lessons before we went. And, when Brazilian guys play soccer and you miss the ball or you don't make a great pass, they're yelling at you. And for someone with Skylar's personality to have people yelling at him in a language he doesn't understand, he knows that he's screwed up, but he doesn't know what they're saying. And that was hard. Whereas for Molly and myself, we had a community of women who were incredibly warm and just scooped us up,
And helpful.
Yeah.
And curious about you, which we'll talk more about in a minute. But there's a passage in chapter 6 where you wrote a little bit about Skylar's problems transitioning and adjusting, which I'd like you to read.
Okay. So this is from a chapter called I Hate Brazil. 2 months in, I hate Brazil had become Skylar's mantra. This was not what parents who had just moved to a foreign country for a year of cultural immersion wanted to hear. There we were, 6,000 miles away from home, on a different continent, in an upriver town in rural Brazil. Peter and I were not thrilled about bagging at all, just because the place wasn't to Skylar's taste. On the other hand, "Why do you hate it?" I asked, trying not to sound frustrated. The kids and I were crossing the plaza in front of our house on our way to a sorveteria, an ice cream shop. A tinny, cavernous bus rattled over the cobblestones in front of us as we were about to step off the curb. It passed, and the little sorveteria reappeared across the street, bright blue with white Art Deco trim. "They're mean. Brazilians are mean. They tease you. They say mean things. They taunt." Skylar's voice was rising in pitch. "I know what you're saying, Skylar," Molly chimed in. We'd entered the small shop with its cluster of ironwork cafe tables. Molly was balancing a self-serve scoop in her right hand as she surveyed the bins of ice cream. "But I think it's just their culture. They do it to everybody." "How do they taunt?" I pursued as I scanned the names, wondering what they were. Graviola, maracuja. I hadn't experienced anything like taunting. I'd received nothing from the people of this small town but qualquer precisa, whatever you need. Was this just the difference between adult and kid lives anywhere? Skylar had become more tongue-tied. Whether because of incipient adolescent hormones or the effort to straddle two languages, Portuguese and English, I didn't know. Molly shrugged. "They're just really direct. Like they just say it if they think someone is feyu, ugly, or fat. They say it right in front of them. Like the other day when I was walking with Hion, and Helene, she just said, 'Molly, don't you think Hion is fat?' What was I supposed to say?" She offered her bowl of ice cream to the woman at the counter to be weighed. "They just laugh at you if something bad happens, like if you fall down." Skylar was warming up. "When you do something wrong in futsal, everybody yells at you. Everybody. I hate Brazilians." Peter and I had carefully chosen Penedo because the kids, note, the kids, had requested immersion in a small town. Now, for better or worse, we were immersed. No international schools, no foreigners, no English. We finished our ice cream and headed back out into the eye-squinting sun. In August in Penedo, daily torrential rains alternated with cerulean skies. Given the humidity, one could see why plaster mildewed so fast and plants grew straight out of the walls. "Well, we don't have to stay, you know." "We can see how it goes," I offered, wondering how readily we would really pull up stakes. "I think it'll be easier when we can speak a little more." "I doubt it," Skylar mumbled, eyes downcast. "It's hard when you don't know what people are saying," I continued as we stepped off the high curb onto the cobblestones. "It's easy to think they're making fun of you when probably they're not even talking about you at all." In retrospect, for Skylar, this year was terrible timing. Not the opportune moment to drop an increasingly self-conscious, prepubescent boy into a competitive, macho culture where he didn't understand the social cues and couldn't speak the language. How had we not foreseen it? I had thought about it, but I'd concluded it would be fine. After all, I had been 12 when my parents dropped me into a French school in Cairo, where I, too, couldn't speak the language. But just because it turned out well for me didn't mean it would for him. A 12-year-old girl is not a 12-year-old boy. Penedo is not Cairo.
You're listening to The Right Question. I'm Cherie Newman, and Amy Ragsdale is with me. We're talking about her memoir, Crossing the River, A Life in Brazil. This program is available as a podcast and at our blog, which you'll find at mtpr.org/twq. There's also a link to it on our Facebook and Twitter pages. After a short break, we'll be back to talk about a dance called capoeira and the family's big adventures in the Amazon jungle when they traveled to visit the Yanomami people. Don't go away. Thank you.
all became instant celebrities in this little town. People would just come over once you moved into your house and knock on the door. You'd come home from somewhere, and there would be all kinds of teenagers in your house, Molly's friends, Skylar's friends. You know, people just dropped by. What kind of an effect did that have on your family life? Yeah. I mean, there was no privacy.
Right, there's no privacy. And that's one of the things that I think is, you know, a big cultural difference, actually, between the U.S. and also maybe Western Europe, I would say, and a lot of other places, that many more people share space than we do here. Here we're all about building a fence. This is my yard. This is my house. It's very clear. And those boundaries just don't seem to exist in a lot of other places, including Brazil. And I think that was one of the things that was really hard for us to adjust to. And on the one hand, we were thrilled that our kids had all these friends. And on the other hand, it was hard for all of us, including them, to figure out how to say, okay, I've had enough, I need time by myself, because that was just not really understood as far as we could tell. On the other hand, it was interesting because I remember Skylar saying, you know, he was going to be excited to go home. There was more to do with kids at home than he felt there was in Pinedo sometimes. And I thought, well, actually, kids at home are really busy. It's going to be actually quite a bit harder for you to find people to hang out with than it is here. You know, I think that's a discussion that we're having a lot here in the United States about how scheduled our kids are, and as opposed to using their minds in a different way, and that is to have to come up from scratch with ways to occupy themselves. You know, we tend to give our kids things that they need to do now.
Mm-hmm. Or toys or equipment or technology to occupy them.
Right, yeah.
Well, each one of you, the four people in your family, had goals to accomplish in Brazil, things they wanted to see and experience. And because you're a dance teacher, one of yours was, you go ahead and say it.
Give it a shot, Cherie. It's so hard.
Capoeira.
Yeah, capoeira.
Tell us what that is.
Capoeira is a Brazilian martial art dance form. And the reason I combine those two is that it's generally believed that it came to Brazil in the 1500s with the slave trade from Africa, and as a fighting training form. And it was then outlawed by the Portuguese slave masters because it was clearly this powerful, dangerous form. And then it went underground, and the slaves sort of disguised it by adding music to it. So along with the sparring that happens, that's pretty traditional in martial art forms, there's a lot of singing and playing of three instruments. So there's a berimbau, which is a stringed gourd instrument, and the atabaque, which is a certain kind of a drum, and the pandeiro, which is sort of like a tambourine. So people stand in a circle, and two people go in and spar to this music. But the goal now is that you come very close to touching the other person, but you never touch them. So it's kind of a game. And essentially, it's, of course, improvised. And it's very dance-like. And it actually had a huge influence on American breakdance. A lot of American breakdance, I suspect, came from capoeira. So all the being upside down on your hands, spinning on your head, you know, a lot of the acrobatics, flipping, is part of capoeira, which is a much older form, obviously.
One of the things on Peter's list was going to see a specific tribe, the Yanomami, in the Amazon region. And they were the last people, basically, on Earth who didn't know about all the rest of the people on Earth in the 1950s. So tell us about this incredible trip you took during the school break where you made this journey into the interior of Brazil.
Yeah. So it's complicated to get to visit the Yanomami. And I thought afterward, with good reason, and I'm glad that it's complicated. Of course, they're far deep in the up rivers in the jungle, so that part's hard. We ended up, you know, hiring a truck that, you know, took us down a orange gumbo road for 3 hours, and then We were taken by a motorized canoe for, gosh, another 8 hours, which ended up happening in the middle of the night, to come to this village. But before you can do that, you have to get all kinds of permission. So you get permission from the Brazilian Government of Indigenous Affairs Office, and then you get permission from the tribe itself, and then you pay a lot. And you pay a lot in terms of offering gifts that they need. So in our case, that was a lot of gasoline and other things like tobacco. So we ended up going upriver, you know, in a canoe that was almost sinking because it was full of gasoline as well as us. So we arrived at, I don't know, I would guess maybe 3 in the morning. And we had also hired a guide. So we had a guide who spoke Yanomami as well as English and Portuguese. And he had said, oh, they have a hotel. They have a very nice, you know, hotel. So when we got there, the hotel was a concrete sort of circular pad with a central pole and a thatch roof and open sides. And we knew that we were going to be sleeping in hammocks because we'd scrambled around and bought hammocks for ourselves before we left. So we rigged our hammocks and went to bed in this under the thatch roof. But there were lots of things, like, you know, nobody told us where there was a bathroom. We were like, well, do we just wander into the woods or what do we do here? But this is pretty familiar to us, you know, so it was great.
It seemed like, if I'm remembering right, that you were there and people were just kind of circling around looking to see who you were. And
absolutely.
It's like you were on display for a time before you could really interact with people.
That's exactly right. And that's another part of their efforts to be careful about who they're letting in and what they do there, and which I really respect. And so, yeah, it became clear that we were actually not cleared to leave our hammock pad. And I think they're being very careful about trying to figure out how to hang on, you know, to their own culture, and then what are they letting in from outside. So, and, you know, boy, incredibly tricky to figure out. So there are a lot of people, I think, who would like to visit the Yanomami. There are people who also want to come in because the Yanomami have things they want, like gold in their rivers. This has been a long time conflict, how to keep out, you know, Brazilian companies from the south who want to come in and dredge the rivers for gold. And there are people, you know, who want to climb the mountains nearby. It's near the border of Venezuela where we were. And so the question is, how can they constructively take advantage of the people who want to come in, you know, and share something of themselves, but also not be decimated by disease and environmental destruction and cultural destruction.
They have taken advantage of other modern technologies. The gasoline was for boats and for generators. Mm-hmm. And there was TV going on.
There was a TV in our pad,
yeah,
which was the community center also. So we would find all kinds of people there joining us, which was also great. I mean, there were a lot of interesting sort of cognitive dissonance moments.
Is there anything, looking back on that year that you spent in that little town and in the country of Brazil, is there anything that you would do differently or any advice you could give to somebody who's considering something like this?
Yeah.
What to do, what not to do?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. In so many ways, and now about 4 years, 3 to 4 years later, you know, I feel like it was really the perfect place in so many ways, that the small town immersed experience is inevitably really hard. But if you can get through it, I also think it's inevitably really rich. And I think our kids would say this as well as we do, and Peter and Skylar also. We went back to visit last summer, and it was just such a full heart experience, you know. I would say that it was not great timing for Skylar. I think it was harder than it needed to be, that there are things to consider, both in terms of what's being missed at home at certain ages and also just certain ages, you know. So it's easy. I think it's easy in the elementary school years And in high school, you know, it would have been a little better for Molly if we had gone during her freshman or sophomore year. We went during her junior year, which is a huge college prep year here. So that made things a little harder for her. Moving into adolescence, it's sort of your height of self-consciousness is maybe not the easiest time. So I'm incredibly proud of Skylar for how well he managed that and how resilient he was.
What did the people of Penedo teach you about life, about yourself?
Oof, okay, I'm going to hold it together here, Cherie. It's just going to make me cry. Oh. Well, you know, I've been struggling for a long time with kind of American pace. And I guess as a working mom, and when I say working, I mean a pretty ambitious career-oriented mom, but also a really invested parent, like many, many, many of us, I find life here pretty overdriven and the external pressure really high to achieve. And I think we have incredible things to learn from Brazilians and many other people in the world in terms of value for time with friends and family and oneself too, you know, simply giving oneself time and maybe the need to curb our ambition a little bit so that one can have that kind of time, breathing time, reflective time. We talk about it a lot here in this country. I don't know how much we do to actually make it possible. I feel generally not much, you know, that the expectations continue to rise. So there's sort of 24/7 you will be available to work in the United States is quite the opposite of Brazil in the northeastern part. I should be clear about that. I think there are very different parts of Brazil. Brazil is huge. And the southern part, I think, culturally is very different. But in the northeastern part, there is incredible value for family and time with friends and time to just laugh and play music and talk. I guess I feel that while it's a little complicated and it takes a lot of effort, and it's not easy. It's not just wholly fun to live abroad, but for me, it has been the most enriching and widening experience possible. And I think for me, that has a huge amount to do with how it connects me to other people in the most fundamental way. And strangely, in a way that I don't think I am necessarily, certainly not as fast here. Because I think we have here all kinds of other ways that we meet people. We find out what you do. You know, we find out where you come from, what your sort of credentials are. In some ways, there, especially if you're bereft of language, you know, it's like you have a son, I have a son, your son is hurt. Come here, I'll hold you because I know what that's like.
Amy Ragsdale and her family live mostly in Missoula, Montana. Look for more information about her at our blog, mtpr.org/twq. Also there, poems and children's book reviews, as well as links to our Facebook and Twitter pages. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Cherie Newman, wishing you a pile of fascinating books and lots of questions.
The Right Question is produced by Cherie Newman, Michael Marsalek, executive producer. Beth Ann Ostein, studio engineer. The Right Question has a Facebook page, a blog, and a podcast. You'll find links to all that at mtpr.org/twq. Thanks for listening and for supporting this program.